My name is Mike Selig, and this is Voices from Our Community. The guest for today's show is like many who have been on Voices shows in the past. It's someone who is working locally to do their small part to solve a national problem or even a global problem. This problem or challenge is particular to the U.S. We're world champions in this field. It is the consuming of things. We've become so conditioned to buy stuff that consumer spending now accounts for a full 70% of our nation's economy. That means if the American consumer starts saving more of their money and quits buying so much stuff, the United States will actually go into a recession. You might ask, how did we get this way? I started to look into how to answer that question and found out a number of very interesting facts about the history of stuff. It starts with a birthday party. You just heard a crowd of over 200 people singing happy birthday to a light bulb. It's from the award-winning documentary, The Light Bulb Conspiracy. This is why the light bulb is so remarkable.
The light bulb at the Livermore Fire Station has been burning continuously since 1901. Ironically, the bulb has already outlasted two webcams.
When incandescent light bulbs were first manufactured, they lasted a lot longer then than they do today. That fact concerned light bulb manufacturers to the point they formed a cartel called the Phoebus Group. They first met in Geneva in 1925. It was the first group effort to engage in large-scale reduction in the quality of their product to generate greater sales and profits. Their main objective was to reduce the average lifespan of the incandescent light bulb from 2,500 hours to 1,000 hours. World War II interrupted the work of the Phoebus Group, but the effort to create shorter lifespans for consumer goods started right back up as the post-war economic recovery turned into an economic boom. This conspiracy to force planned obsolescence into the market was twisted into an almost patriotic effort to stimulate the economy. The advertising industry started using psychological tricks to motivate people to buy more things and then throw them away before they wore out or needed repair.
Planned obsolescence. The desire on the part of a consumer to own something a little newer, a little better, a little sooner than is necessary. We certainly in America.
That's the voice of Brooks Stevens. He was born in 1911 and became an industrial designer. His timing couldn't have been more perfect to ride the post-war wave of American consumer goods. He designed home furnishings, appliances, automobiles, and even motorcycles. But what he is best known for is being the father of modern-day planned obsolescence.
The approach in America is one of making the American consumer unhappy with the product that he has enjoyed the use of for a period, have him pass it on to the second-hand market, and obtain the newest product with the newest possible look.
Manufacturers became more convinced that the way to better profits wasn't to build better quality into their products, but to find that point where the consumer was willing to look at a newer alternative to something they owned. Auto manufacturers spent millions on a new concept, the automobile model year. Autos were first built to compete on quality and innovation. But somewhere in the early post-war years, the quality of cars increased to the point that there were more used car sales versus new car sales. The result was that new cars became more about the luster and less about longevity. Here's Rob Conaber, CEO of the Shasta Group, speaking about the introduction of the model year and also something far more troubling.
Well, Well, they created something called the model year. And we take it for granted now, but the model year of a car was a brand new concept back in the 20s and 30s. And the idea was we'd have cosmetic changes that would entice people to upgrade year after year. You can see the fins and the taillights and all these things that actually weren't that useful. They turned this technology icon that didn't change every year into something that was more of an element of fashion. More nefariously, they started to do things like limit the useful life of the cars. They would put in parts that they knew would fail after 2 or 3 years and at 50,000 miles instead of 100,000 miles. And there were a whole series of things that they would do where in the supply chain for replacement parts when things break, they'd stop supplying replacement carts. And this was all enticed, or all done in order to entice customers to buy new cars every year. And as a result, Detroit stopped serving customers.
It took a worldwide gas crisis in the mid-70s and the arrival of high-quality cars from Japan to point American car manufacturers back to building better cars. Something that has benefited the American car consumer ever since. After a short break, I'm going to share some of the ways planned obsolescence moved into the modern era. I bet you have a few stories of your own. Radio Like This is brought to you by the generous support of our founding sponsors at ADCO, Commercial Printing and Graphics, Clark County's local print shop since 1993. ADCO features stationery, posters, flyers, tickets, business cards, stickers, catalogs, and much more. Print on anything and mail anywhere. Learn more at ADCO1.com. That's ADCO, the number one.com. KXRW would like to thank our friends at New Vansterdam for supporting our radio community. New Vansterdam is the premier cannabis market in the Vancouver area. They carry a variety of cannabis products ranging from pre-rolls, vape cartridges, and edibles to CBD topicals, oils, and tinctures. New Vansterdam is located in the Heights Shopping Center on the corner of Mill Plain and Andreessen Road. Open 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. 365 days a year for people 21 years of age and over. More information available at newvansterdam.com. That's newvansterdam.com.
Apple has agreed to pay $500 million in a class action lawsuit alleging the company slowed down older iPhones, pushing users to upgrade their devices or batteries. People who owned any version of the iPhone 6 to the 7 Plus or certain SEs could get $25 or more for each device, depending on how many claims are filed. The settlement, though, still requires final approval.
In the last 20 years, there's been an explosion in tech. The average user has a computer and a smartphone and can't seem to live without either of them. While the electronic era has brought untold benefits to business and to the personal lives of people, it hasn't come without a cost. Manufacturers like Apple purposely slowing down their smartphones before they would normally need replacement is just one of those costs to consumers. There is another cost that's as hard to see as it is to measure. That's the cost of extracting rare metals from third world nations, the use of toxic chemicals to make the circuit boards, and finally, the disposal of millions of pounds of high-tech garbage. Planned obsolescence accelerates the demand for tech and increases the pressure and harm put on people and the planet. Sky News in Britain reported on the mining of cobalt, just one of the rare metals used in our smartphones.
Cobalt, mined by children's hands in dangerous and dirty conditions in the Democratic Republic of Congo, filmed by Sky News. Cobalt is one of 40 minerals that end up in smartphones.
The black part is cobalt.
Part of a bewilderingly complex global supply chain. from suppliers to smelters to factories, assembly lines. Finally, it ends up in our own hands. The clean, blank modernity of the digital revolution erases its grim origins. Sky News filmed children as young as 4 working in appalling conditions. The cobalt they mined ended up being bought by a Chinese cobalt mining company called Huayu CDM. The smartphone revolution is already 10 years old. The devices we now delight in are impossibly sleek and powerful. But the brutal conditions that make them possible still seem like the relic of another age. Tom Cheshire, Sky News.
Huayu and Apple were interviewed for the Sky News story, and their response was predictable. Both companies said they were committed to not using child labor. Both said they did not want to cause anyone to work in such terrible conditions. But what if the journalists hadn't filmed children picking lumps of cobalt out of the dirt? Now as the word spread that manufacturers must adopt a more humane and sustainable method of mining and manufacturing, they'll have to change their ways, as long as we don't let up the pressure. Another way we can alleviate the overuse of a limited supply of rare metals and other resources is to force manufacturers to make the things we buy last longer. We need the right to repair. At this time, over 20 states had right to repair bills introduced into their state legislature. Every one of us can put pressure on both our state and national representatives to pass those laws. We can also put pressure on companies that need to improve their practices. While it's essential to push for policy change from both our politicians and our manufacturers, we can all do something at home that can really make a difference and could also save us a little money. I want to introduce you to someone who has embodied the sustainability mantra of reduce, reuse, and recycle, Tara Heilman. Tara has worked in the sustainability field in Clark County for many years. Currently, she runs the Repair Cafe. A Repair Cafe is an event held at different locations throughout the year. It consists of dozens of volunteers who gladly donate their time and special skills, and people from the local area bringing in their broken items to see if they can be repaired. I've been to a few repair cafes and seen bicycles, computers, clothing, small home appliances, even jewelry get repaired. Tara coordinates that small army of volunteers and many other moving parts needed to put on one of these events. Here's Tara to talk about the Repair Clark County program and what happens at a repair cafe.
So the Repair Clark County program, what we do is we hold roughly monthly events and we repair your broken stuff for free. That's what I always tell people. So that's the really simple version of it. And we have 6 different fixing categories and we go to all different venues throughout Clark County. And those 6 categories are sewing, electronics, small appliances, bicycles, sharpening, and then other, which is basically anything that doesn't fit in one of the previous 5 categories. So the only real rule that we have for our fixing is it has to be small enough for you to bring it into us, carry it by yourself. And then we don't work on microwaves and we don't work on gas engines. But pretty much anything else you can bring to us, we will at least try to figure out what's wrong with it, if not actually fix it, repair it for you. And then you go home with a fixed item. The first 15 to 20 minutes, especially, I call lightly controlled chaos because there's a lot going on. You know, you've got 35 volunteers who are all launching into their first fix of the night. So that's 35 clients as well. And then there's everybody else that's still waiting too. So one thing I actually do recommend is, you know, our events run 2 hours and most repair events that I know of in this area run 2 hours. And I always tell people, come 45 minutes to 60 minutes into it. You don't necessarily need to be there right at the beginning. And you might have a better time if you show up fashionably late.
If you're interested in seeing what goes on during a repair event, drop by and see for yourself.
What'd you bring in today?
I brought in a 3-wheel bicycle and it kind of keeps turning to the left. My wife can't ride it, so I go to Columbia Springs all the time with my granddaughter and stuff. So when I saw this in there, I thought, okay, that's a perfect chance to get somebody to fix it. This is great.
The concept of repairing our things goes back to when we started making those things in the first place. Repair used to be a normal part of our economy, But the rise of cheaply sourced items that are made to fail too soon has caused an unsustainable demand on our resources and our pocketbooks. The Repair Cafe revived the ethos of repair and reuse.
So the concept got started in the Netherlands a little over a decade ago. So they just had their 10-year anniversary. And it's just spread since then. So there's over 1,600 of them across the globe, which is amazing. And, you know, it's really a waste reduction program at its core is, you know, if you have something like a toaster, there's a lot of resources wrapped up in that thing. And we don't think of that. You know, when we think of recycling, we think of our plastic bottles and our disposable items. But our durable items have a ton of resources embodied in them. And so if we can extend the life of that product and keep somebody from having to chuck it, maybe they were able to recycle it, probably not because it's got a lot of different things in it. But even if they were able to recycle it, if we are able to instead reuse that item through repair, that represents all of those resources that don't need to be re-extracted from the planet and, you know, remanufactured into something new to replace the broken thing. So it's really the carbon footprint of repair versus reuse reuse through repair versus recycling or landfilling or, you know, the worst of all is litter is just phenomenal.
What's the weirdest thing that's ever been brought into the Repair Cafe?
Oh, the weirdest things. It's funny because I am the program coordinator, so unfortunately, it's a little bit of lightly controlled chaos for 2 hours straight. But what is always interesting to me is oftentimes I will see something come through the door, and in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, good luck with that. And but I get to see all the repair tickets at the end, you know? And so I'm flipping through the repair tickets and I see, oh wait, that thing really did get repaired. That's amazing to me. So again, going back to my very first event, there was somebody who came in with a very large, I think it was like a window blind, but the thing was probably 8 feet long at least. And I just thought, yeah, right. Like, I don't know that we're going to be able to fix whatever is wrong with that thing. Yeah. But that thing got fixed. There was somebody who brought in an extension cord. I didn't know you could fix extension cords, but apparently, yes, you can. Mm-hmm. At our last event, a friend of mine actually brought in a vintage vacuum cleaner, and it's a hand-powered. So we're talking from the 1890s, I think it was, or 1910s or something like that. But it was, you know, it's like a pump action kind of vacuum cleaner. So, we see all kinds of fun and interesting things. Wow. I mean, you know, for the by and large, of course, it's all, you know, things that you know what they are right off the bat. But the other things I really like are at our last event, we had somebody bring in one of those electric fireplaces, but it was it's pretty hefty. And what I liked about that is, you know, what I mentioned earlier, which is think of all of the resources involved in that. That was a huge piece of, you know, there was glass, so that's silica, and there's, all different types of metals included in that. And, you know, had we not been able to get that working, you know, she probably would have maybe recycled it, but probably just trashed it and had to buy a new one. And so, though, you know, all of those resources would have been wasted. The only real rule that we have for our fixing is it has to be small enough for you to bring it into us, carry it by yourself, and then we don't work on microwaves and we don't work on gas engines. But pretty much anything else you can bring to us, we will at least try to figure out what's wrong with it, if not actually fix it, repair it for you, and then you go home with a fixed item.
So how many, do you keep track of how many things you repair?
Yeah, so we are up over 1,500 items now. And then another interesting metric for us is percentage. And so most of our events run roughly in the mid 80% for repairs. So I always jokingly say, you know, if you bring something to us, the odds are really good that you're going to go home with something fixed, which is awesome.
Turns it into smog, then it settles in our lungs. Oh, garbage, 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 garbage.
Next, you'll hear about the amazing army of volunteers that help us from turning our prized possessions into garbage. After a short break. KXRW wants to thank our friends and sponsors at Boomerang Therapy Works, where exercise is medicine. They offer a variety of one-on-one treatment options that can be tailored to your health and wellness. They provide physical therapy, massage therapy, personal trainers, exercise programs, group classes, and they specialize in customized Parkinson's treatment. Located in downtown Vancouver, find out more at BoomerangTherapyWorks.com. That's BoomerangTherapyWorks.com, where exercise is medicine.
A lot of our volunteers, probably, I'd say probably about 80% of our volunteers, if not more, are retired. And so they are, you know, electrical engineers or homemakers, or, you know, they did something else for 35 or 45 years. And, you know, once you hit retirement, a lot of times people are a little bored, quite honestly. And so I think that, you know, this gives them the opportunity to use some of those skills, to learn new skills. They learn from each other, they learn from the clients that come in. And then there's just this really amazing community building aspect of the events as well. Hopefully you've kind of seen that when you were there. We had a gentleman at our last event, and he said, "This event is great. This event is community." And that was very touching to me because I agree with him. I think volunteers come to the events for individual reasons. I don't think there's one silver bullet reason of, and you know, it was interesting because when I first started, I thought, okay, well, I've got to figure out, you know, why people volunteer so that I can make sure that we, you know, keep a good volunteer core, because we need 35 to 40 volunteers for every single event. And that's not a small ask, you know?
Yeah.
And, but the more I do this job, the more I realize that the reasons or the sets of reasons are as individual as the individual themselves. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people bring things in not because they can't afford to replace that item. It's because there's a sentimental value attached.
Yeah, we have a lot of sentimental items that come into the events, and those are some of my favorites, actually. I enjoy antiques. It's kind of one of my quirks, and so I love to see the really old stuff come in. I remember my very first event as the coordinator of this program, we had a typewriter come in, and they said, "Oh yeah, it's just been sitting on a shelf in the garage, and you know, we're not even sure what we're going to do with it, but we couldn't bear to give it up. You know, we couldn't bring ourselves to get rid of it." And they said it had been sitting for over a decade. And we were able to, it just needed a good cleaning. You know, there was nothing actually wrong with it. It just needed a little bit of TLC, and it worked just fine.
I asked Tara why she was so passionate about her job.
I think the difference for me has been, the surprising difference and the really energizing difference has been, this is a movement. And I think it's going to take a movement to save humanity's chance on this planet. I never say save the planet, because the planet's going to be just fine one way or another. You know, the planet will still be here. It's whether or not we are here and all of the other species that make our lives better and bring beauty and everything else. You know, so I think I'm learning valuable skills about how to motivate large groups of people, and you know, why people come to something like this and spend their time and energy, and you know, how can we address these threats that are threatening all of us. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's been really, like I said, energizing and heartening to see people really care, and you know, will have been just so generous with their time and energy and talents to, you know, help out their fellow man and help out the planet at the same time.
So if somebody wanted to learn more about Columbia Springs or the Repair Cafe, or even if they wanted to volunteer, mm-hmm. is there one place where they can go and check
yeah.
out?
Yeah, so the best way to do that would be to go to repairclarkcounty.org. So that covers what we do and where we do it. And that's actually, if you notice in the browser window, it will actually redirect you to columbiasprings.org/repair. So what's really neat about that is you can check out the repair program, and then you can go back up to the top and, you know, kind of go back to just Columbia Springs and then see what Columbia Springs does as well. But that will have that, what I gave you there, that URL will have all of the information about upcoming events. It has some frequently asked questions about what should I bring, what shouldn't I bring, what should I expect, what is this like, can I come, you know, is it truly free? Spoiler alert, yes it is. You know, can I come even if I don't have something to repair? Yeah, absolutely. Come enjoy some refreshments, you know, chat with your neighbors, you know, just see what it's all about. They're free events, so you might as well.
Once again, here's where you can learn more about Columbia Springs and the Repair Cafe.
Our website is repairclarkcounty.org, and you can also go to columbiasprings.org for the Columbia Springs information.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
You guys are making really good noise for radio.
I'm just going to ask you, picking up that sound?
Yeah. Oh, it's great.
You know, grinding sound?
Yeah, it's good. Beautiful.
It's a manual labor.
That's 51.
I'd like to take a moment to share a few thoughts about community radio. KXRW is embedded in our community. We have a staff of 100% volunteers. Many of us have taken money out of our own pockets to keep KXRW going, so we can continue to support the people and the good causes that we're so lucky to be a part of. If you'd like to be a part of the KXRW community, you can start by going to our website at kxrw.org. You can see what we're up to on our Facebook page. If you have an idea for a story or a radio show that you'd like to produce yourself, KXRW can help you get started, as we've done with many of our new producers. And finally, if you just want to sit back and help us grow, you can donate to our station to help cover our monthly bills, so we can find new stories to tell. All you've got to do is visit our website and start clicking. I'd like to say thank you to the Repair Cafe volunteers and the people who take their valuable time to bring in their prized possessions rather than throwing them in the garbage. I'm so grateful that we have a sustainability warrior like Tara Heilman in our midst. The fight against planned obsolescence is part of a much bigger picture. It's part of our battle to stop climate change. As Tara said earlier, this isn't about saving the planet. The planet's still going to be here. It's that we want to be here with it. That's why we need to continue the fight against climate change and planned obsolescence. My name is Mike Selig, and you've been listening to Voices from Our Community. One day, I'd like to hear your voice, too.
It's planned obsolescence.
What's that?
Come with me.
Planned obsolescence, that's making stuff that breaks on purpose. Planned obsolescence, it's how companies bend us over and screw us.
What do you mean?
When Edison first started making light bulbs, they could last for 100+ years. Some are even still shining without replacements or repairs.
cool if they had like a laser system where you know, like.
Yeah, I know, it would be nice. But,
he's got an eyeball, huh?
Like, first time on radio, but yeah, so.
Can I talk to you for
sure.
a second? What'd you bring in today?
I brought in a three-wheel bicycle, and it kind of keeps turning to the left. So my wife can't ride it, so I go to Columbia Springs all the time with my granddaughter and stuff. So when I saw this in there, I thought, okay, that's a perfect chance to get somebody to fix it. So
absolutely. So when you're riding on the side of the road, you don't want a bike that turns to the left.
That's absolutely right.
Well, it looks like he's got it taken care of here.
He's doing a good job. This is great.
Yeah. Do you remember repair shops back
yes.
in the day?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely do.
Do you think we could find one if we went looking for one, just a general repair shop?
I don't know. Everything's so specialized now. You know, I mean, you don't have that kind of jack of all trades where you used to just take everything to. Everything's so complicated now. Either you got to kind of concentrate on one thing, or
or throw it away and get a new one.
Yeah, almost.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, congratulations on your repaired bicycle.
Thank you.
The name?
Judy.
Picking up that sound.
Oh, good. It's great.
That grinding sound.
Yeah, it's
good.
Beautiful.
It's a manual labor.
Absolutely. And it's a lost art.
It is.
A lot of people can't sharpen them.
It's true.
And you kind of gotta have a touch for it.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I learned from my grandfather. He was a machinist, and that's all he would use is file.
Wow.
And he explained to me how to sharpen the edge. It's not always. You don't always want a point, you know, like on a scissors is a shearing factor, not a point cut. So
right.
It's more of a straight edge. You want a perfectly straight edge. That's why a file works so good, because it's flat and straight and harder instead of sanding, you know.
Yeah.
And he had the old push mower. Let me tell you, you could just breeze through the lawn with his, because it was so sharp.
My wife, I've always used a push mower. My wife loves mowing the lawn, and I let her do it.
Uh-huh.
But she just loves, and we've had a push mower forever. We have a hard time finding somebody to sharpen the push mower.
Yeah.
Can you do push mower?
I can do it. It takes quite a long time.
Okay.
Yes, I can do it.
Well, we're willing to pay to have it done, honestly.
Yeah, I could do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
You got a card?
No, I don't. I just a volunteer thing.
Okay.
But I could do it for you.
Okay.
I could give you my number.
I'll get in touch with Sarah.
Okay.
And,
yeah, she has my number.
Yeah.
I'd be glad to. I'm retired, and
yeah,
I can make a little extra money on the side.
Oh, yeah. What'd you do? When
iron worker.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Well, now I'm kind of bored.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I've been working with steel all my life, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. What kind of projects did you work on?
Worked on every dam on the Columbia River, Snake River system. Worked on replacement towers for the Golden Gate Bridge.
Wow.
In my last probably 10 years, I built Navy SEAL boats and high-tech aluminum warcraft.
Wow.
I got some pictures I could show you. They're badass Navy SEAL. I'm a Navy guy. I'm a boat guy.
Yeah.
I built boats. I built ships. And
wow.
So that was kind of my proudest project was the Navy SEAL boats.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. High performance all the way.
Oh, yeah. They're high-tech and really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like
so
that.
There was a point where you guys built the boat, and then they dropped the motor in or the engine in and went out and tested. Did you get to see it tested?
See it, drive it, ride it. Oh, yes.
Really?
Oh, yes. I was the head fabricator on these boats.
Wow.
I put in the jet pumps, and then we'd come in, and I did mostly the fabrication of the hull and structure.
Yeah.
And then we'd have other crews come in, put all the electrical, the plumbing, the motors in. Mm-hmm. But I put in the big jet pumps and the bolt of the boat.
Wow.
Want to see pictures?
Yeah, I do. Absolutely. My father was a Navy guy. He was on a minesweeper, and they make them out of wood.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
I was in Sea Scouts when I was a kid, and we had a minesweeper. That was our project boat.
Nice.
This is a...
Oh, my God.
This one, I built a prototype for those.
Wow.
50 cal on the front.
So that holds
one of my proudest.
It's beautiful, and it must fly.
Yeah, it's, yeah. Our saying is, I could tell you, but I have to kill you.
Yeah.
So I can't. You know.
Yeah.
And that's, this is actually the last project I worked on. I built all the housing on this, a submarine hunter.
Really?
I built all this, all aluminum. I built all the houses.
And yeah.
The antenna and the sonar structure.
Now that has an outrigger on it.
Yeah, it has two of them actually.
Okay.
It's real narrow for sonar.
Yeah, it needs stability.
Okay. And it's going to be unmanned once they do all the training. It's an unmanned vessel.
For hunting submarines.
For finding submarines.
And it can go like pretty darn fast, I imagine.
Yeah, I don't know how fast on this one.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
There's another one of the Navy SEALs with dual 50 cals in the back.
Yeah.
This is an action shot. I like that one.
So they're kind of like the Riverine boats back in Vietnam, but
they took over the PT boats.
Okay.
Basically, yeah, they're the fast attack boats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's a wings we built for Israeli Navy.
Wow.
They submerge where only 11 inches of it sticks out of the water.
I was wondering why the bow looked like that.
It's just so high tech.
Low profile.
It's just amazing.
And
then I built two Portland fireboats.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, that was my...
Very cool. That is awesome.
Finished my career. I had a heart attack, so I retired a little early.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So I kind of miss it.
I bet. Well, I appreciate you doing what you're doing and what you did for our service.
Thank you.
That's pretty cool.
Thank you.
Well, I'm going to let you get back to work. Thanks again.
You're
and
welcome.
Thanks for sharing those pictures. I love that
Thank
kind
you.
Of stuff.
Enjoy it.
Thank you. What you bringing to get repaired?
We're not doing it.
Pardon me?
Yeah, she said no. How yours are gone?
I can't hear you.
It's okay.
Oh.
So the other thing you could do is go to the thrift store.
Yeah, he just told me about a place
Water is just the one converter.
These pile up in thrift stores quite a bit if you can just find the right connector.
Okay, so it goes through here.
I think it's about...